We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. That fine gentleman over there is Dan Rubenstein. The podcast, as per usual, driven by our good friends over at Geico. Dan Rubenstein.
What's up, dude?
How you doing, brother?
I'm pretty good. The sun is shining. We've got the little guy in school. I can't complain. I'm going to take a shower for the first time in a couple days because the weekends can get away from me from a hygiene perspective.
Sure.
But I'm excited about this show. I'm excited about all sorts of weird college football news that is either happening or seems to be imminent. I'm excited for, we've got the proper or maybe the old proper signing day here happening shortly that we'll talk about after the fact. We've got, still moves to be made on the coaching front. And I think we still need to do a bit of digesting of the 2021 season and maybe what we can learn from it from a very specific perspective moving forward. So I'm juggling all sorts of information chainsaws that I'm ready to hopefully keep tossing back and forth with you.
Like a college football snake, Dan, there is so much news and information. We've swallowed it whole.
Yeah.
And we're just slowly digesting as it works its way through.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I don't know if that's the right way to characterize what's going on right now, but that's how I feel. There's a lot to take in, believe it or not. It's going to be February the 1st as a lot of people listen to this. Yeah. And there is a lot going on. Yeah. In the world of college football. So we're going to dive in. We're going to do that. We're going to try and give further context for the season that was in 2021. Don't forget verballers.com. VERBALLERS.com is where you can go. Get access to this show, all of our shows a little bit early. You can watch all of these shows on video if you are ever so inclined. You also get access to our weekly Brew and A episodes, as well as some of the other bonus stuff that we're going to continue doing, especially now as we get into February. It's full on off season mode, Dan. We've got a lot cooking in the laboratory. So one more time, verballers.com is where you can go to check that out. Don't forget also solidgiveaway.com. That is our monthly giveaway website. You just got to go through like four or five steps. It's free to join, free to sign up.
Yep.
And if we draw your name at random, you will win a signed Reggie Bush mini helmet.
Wow.
Signed Reggie Bush mini helmet. I joked about it before. I was only half kidding when I said that I might put my name in. I love Reggie Bush. As a Notre Dame fan. Still love Reggie Bush. Meant a lot to me as
an Oregon fan. Loved Reggie Bush. Yeah. I'm
awesome
right there
player.
With you.
Awesome player back in the day. Wish he wouldn't have scored in 2005. But nonetheless, SolidGiveaway.com is how you get your name in the running. For that, we're going to pick the winner on February the 14th, which coincidentally enough, I guess is Valentine's Day.
Yes. It'd be a great Valentine's Day gift for yourself if you get fortunate enough to win it. Yeah.
And finally, don't forget to subscribe and follow and like and share and rate and review the podcast wherever you can. Apple,
yeah.
Spotify, Google, Overcast, Podcast Addict, wherever.
Pocket Casts. Yeah, there's all sorts of great options. Where are we starting, though, Ty? Where are we starting today's show? Because I think basically through May, mid-May, I don't know when all of the spring practices and games officially end, but we're going to have portal stuff. We're going to have movement across the sport just because that's the nature of the sport right now. Where do you want to begin? Well, at the time of recording, Caleb Williams still has not officially selected a team. Obviously, there's going to be LA smoke considering Lincoln Riley's new home. There was Wisconsin smoke, or maybe there still is Wisconsin smoke, depending on the reports that you choose to believe have credibility. It seems like Wisconsin's out of it, but who knows? They just hired Bobby Engram, who we talked about is the father of a teammate, and that teammate played high school football in the DMV area with Caleb Williams. You know, there's still going to be, I saw LSU smoke involved, I suppose, with Caleb Williams. I don't know. At the time of recording, he has not selected a destination. And also, Ty, the NFL speculation with Jim Harbaugh. Vikings interest, Dolphins interest, despite mega Michigan donor and Dolphins owner Stephen Ross saying that he was not going to be the one to take Harbaugh from Michigan. I mean, what is interesting to you is, you know, there's Jackson Dart going to Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin.
Jackson, Mississippi.
I want to know what is stirring your brain drink right now.
Well, the Jackson Dart news to me, honestly, I was relieved to see that he was going to Ole Miss because we talked about it on a show before. It made too much sense. Don't put yourself in the situation if you're going to transfer out. If you're going to try and maximize your value in your remaining eligibility, don't go into a situation like Oklahoma where you've already got another high profile transfer in Dylan Gabriel. Don't do that. Don't do that. And not to say Ole Miss doesn't have other competition at quarterback, but somebody put the quote out there. He's not going to Ole Miss to just build depth on the depth chart. He's going because he wants to start at quarterback. And I think it's a good move. You combine that with some of the other moves that Lane Kiffin's made in the transfer portal. Lane Kiffin has made some hay on the transfer portal. Ole Miss has done extremely well on the transfer portal so far. So I like the move for Jackson Dart. Jackson Dart, former four-star out of where? Utah, Draper, Utah. I want to say got a comp to Alex Smith on his 24/7 recruiting profile, which is all very, very positive.
Yeah.
Played six games for USC last year, 62% completion percentage, threw a couple picks, but he was young. I think there's nothing but incredible potential
there. Yeah,
incredible potential for Jackson Dart going to Ole Miss. So I really like that move. But the Jim Harbaugh stuff to me is so interesting. It is so interesting because the rumors will just not go away. This has been a couple weeks running now where we've been talking about Jim Harbaugh potentially wanting to make that move back into the NFL. And then we heard some other scuttlebutt that he had actually told a recruit, hey, there might be some NFL interest that I might entertain. I believe that
Correct.
Was his phrase.
Yeah, he's entertaining those conversations. Yeah.
And then it fell through with the Raiders. The Raiders are going to hire Josh McDaniels, I guess, from New England. And it seemed like for a short moment in time, maybe some of those rumors had quelled. But then there was reported interest and an interview with the Vikings. And now maybe the Dolphins thing has come back after all, even given the Ross connection with Michigan and the Dolphins. It just feels to me like there is so much smoke here. And it's not about money. Otherwise, we would have heard a lot about money. And this whole thing would have been put to bed 2 weeks ago. It seems to me like there is genuine interest on behalf of Harbaugh to get back into the league, to find a new team to work with, and to make the jump. Now, it would put Michigan in a really tough spot, given the fact that it's so late in the cycle. As you said at the top here, National Signing Day at time of recording is tomorrow. So, that would be a difficult spot for the Wolverines, especially on the heels of winning the Big Ten championship. and having to retool now going into the 2022 season. But if nothing more, I can't say for sure that Harbaugh is going to leave because nobody knows that. It feels right. that way, though. It feels like he really genuinely has interest. This is not something he's just doing as a leverage play to get more money. Like, this is a guy who was successful there before. I think he wants to take another crack at the NFL. So I'm buying on it. I don't know where he ends up, but I do think the interest is real. And I think if it's going to happen, it's going to happen within the next couple of days.
It seems that not only is the interest real in going to the NFL, and, you know, these can be looked at as pretty similar things, but the interest is real in not being a college football coach, right? Like, that a college football, a major college football job is an either fully in or not up to it opportunity.
That's right.
And it definitely has seemed that Jim Harbaugh has been fully in. The commitment to Michigan has been extremely real. And so, I don't know, in a lot of these situations, like, okay, let's say the Vikings, who I think they just hired a new GM or president that he had a connection to when he was with the 49ers. I don't know his name. I'm not up to date with my, like, NFL front office guys. But he has specifically shown interest in that. The story that he would entertain the Raiders job, should that be presented to him. Like, this is somebody who, if you were to believe the stories that are coming out, has not just, like, he could have just tweeted, I have no interest in pursuing any NFL opportunities at this time. Could be a money ploy. It could be, but it doesn't seem like he's driven by that. So this seems like a human who wants to be an NFL coach. And if you want to be an NFL coach on a certain level, for whatever reason, be it the changing ways of college football, doesn't want to be a major college football coach. And that leaves Michigan in quite a lurch. They're recruiting against killers. They're recruiting against emerging killers like Michigan State, and you have Penn State and Ohio State right there. And so right now, with signing day, with recruiting 2023, 2024 kids, how can Michigan look at them in the eye? How can Jim Harbaugh, how can any of these guys say, like, yeah, he's going to be your coach? And that's okay that you can't say that confidently, but you can't say that with any degree of realism that your coach is committed to winning a national championship at Michigan, because it is a 1,000% all-in prospect, and the expectations, now that Michigan is officially a capital P playoff program, is for Michigan to continue being a capital P playoff program. And you can't be.
The one thing I want to go back to, I've never heard of it before, where a coach is telling a recruit he would entertain NFL interest.
Right.
I'm far more comfortable with the Brian Kelly or the Mario Cristobal method, where they know it and they tell white lies and everybody gets that
right.
aspect of it. That's what we're used to. But that shocking level of honesty on one half is definitely commendable. It's mm-hmm. not something you hear a lot about. But I think it's also very troubling if you're a Michigan fan, if you want them to stick around, to just straight up tell a kid that leads me to believe that it's genuine. This is a guy who wants to go back to the league. If he gets an offer, he's going to take it.
But how many coaches have ever been in the position of Jim
Not
Harbaugh?
Many. Not many. No, for
going
sure.
from basically the top of the mountain in the NFL back to college, where he could have just stayed in the NFL and pursued other opportunities. A unique situation for sure, given that he played there and, you know, has become this top coach. But yeah, it does seem like he, you know, it's one of those things where the NFL season is what it is, and it ends at a different point of time than when the college one ends, and the way Michigan's season ended as late as it did. Like, it's just, you can't just quit the job at Michigan and say, I'm just going to wait for an NFL job. Like, you can't do that. So it is precarious, and, you know, Michigan has internal candidates. I think Mike McDonald is going back to the Ravens, right? He's going back to the Ravens to be their defensive coordinator. And so you have Josh Gattis and Mike Hart and like Harbaugh's son, who's like 33 or something like that, who's on staff there. Jay Harbaugh is well regarded. But no, it's Michigan is in some sort of like program purgatory right now. And it's kind of a bummer.
It is a bummer. It's a huge bummer. So a few points on this news. First off, we will continue doing what we've been doing. If there is any late breaking coach news, that is find the right time, fire up a YouTube stream.
Yep.
Bring on Michigan people, get comments from the Verballerhood, that type of thing. So
yeah.
If and when this would break, I don't know anything. We're not privy to insider information. It feels to me like things are building towards this. If it happens, we will be doing a stream. Please follow along on social media. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't already. And then you'll be notified if and when we decide to go live and talk about this, if it comes to fruition. The second thing that I would offer on this front is, which direction would Michigan go, Dan? That to me, outside of the fact that it's a huge bummer if Harbaugh decides to leave after winning the Big Ten championship after all these years, finally beat Ohio State. If he decides to leave, it does put Michigan in a big lurch, like you said. They do have internal candidates. They've got Josh Gattis. They've got Mike Hart. You mentioned Harbaugh's kid. I don't know if that's realistic or not. There are also some outside candidates, right? We heard about Bill O'Brien as a candidate. I don't know if I really buy that, but Bill O'Brien's a name. Matt Campbell's a name. You brought up Jeff Hafley. There are all sorts of names out there that could be willing to jump over to Ann Arbor. So if and when this happens, it would be fascinating to see which direction the Michigan brass wants to go, given the fact that the program's in a pretty good spot. It's in a good spot.
Yeah.
And to have someone new take over at this juncture is a really, really tough ask. So,
and
so many layers of fascination here.
Most certainly a program that has hired either internally or hired guys with Michigan experience. And the one time they didn't, and they went after that flashy national name,
it
wasn't too long ago, but relatively, you know, it's not the most modern hiring, but Rich Rod didn't work out. And certainly left people feeling, oh, we need people who understand this place and can navigate this place. And you go to Brady Hoke, who had Michigan assistant experience. And of course, Lloyd Carr was an assistant there forever, and Jim Harbaugh's connection. And so it's a question of, like, do those influences have that type of voice in the room where they're going to hire Mike Hart, or they'll hire, you know, Josh Gattis, somebody with Michigan experience, or will they go external to find the best long-term fit? Whether it's an internal or external, whatever, that there's always the fascinating politics behind the scenes at a place that large.
More to come on the Jim Harbaugh stuff for sure.
Yeah. And if it's not this year, it's next year, right? It's this just Jim Harbaugh is not a long-term Michigan coach. That's what we know now.
What else is going on in the world of college football that you'd like to give voice to here very quickly?
I don't know, man. I saw that Lane Kiffin tweeted out that some sort of image that a fan made, that he's the Portal King with the Tiger King imagery. They landed, well, obviously, you know, Jackson Hart.
Mississippi.
I think they landed, I think, Georgia Tech's best edge rusher, Jared Ivey, I believe his name is. And so they've built out their program, and as a lot of top teams are, LSU's bringing in a bunch of kids. USC, of course, continues to bring in kids.
Did you see the Brian Kelly videos?
Oh, my God. Okay, so.
Did you see that?
Brian Kelly with those, like, 360-degree cameras circling you like you see at weddings or movie premieres or something, and he's doing that and flashing L's or guns or something with recruits.
And then
he's wearing his tech vest.
The tech vest, right, the official uniform of being cool at LSU. He's doing the grit. They're teaching him to do the gritty.
Sure, of course.
Which I want to see more of this, frankly. We're in the content business here.
Yeah.
On the Solid Verbal. And for as cringeworthy as it does appear, I admire the hustle. I think we've come to know Brian Kelly as every bit as disingenuous as you might expect. So
yeah,
it gives me a little bit of pleasure as a Notre Dame fan to know that there's probably a great large part of him that hates the fact that he has to go through any of this.
Who is?
But he understands the value of it. He understands the value of it, which is why he's a successful college football coach.
Who is, in your mind, the Power Five or other, you know, G5, FCS, whatever, who is the coach that is the least likely coach to debase himself socially in pursuit of recruiting clout? Like, who is the guy who will be the last one to do this video? Is it David Shaw?
It could be David Shaw. I was going to say Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen got fired because of his lack of
Dan Mullen would do this in a second. Dan Mullen will do anything for this kind of clout. He won't necessarily grind for recruits,
right?
But when there's a camera or something, like, sure. Is it Pat Fitzgerald?
Oh, man.
We already know that Jim Harbaugh slept over at a kicker's house. It's not this. It's not on camera, but we know that he did that. So who is that guy? Who is that guy that is going to be the final? Like, I think Nick Saban is unlikely to do something like this, but he's also like, yeah, it can be fun.
But he's also going to Arch Manning's basketball game. So it's not
That's normal, though.
I know.
I think that's for a top kid. I'm talking about the dancing and the like trying to tap into a trend that is 50, 40 years your junior. So it does have like big, I don't know if you've ever come across this on Instagram or TikTok. I know you're big on social media now.
Sure.
If you've come across like a 28-year-old doing dances with like their 57-year-old husband, 64-year-old husband, and like they say age difference is that big deal. I try not to swim in those waters too much, but I've seen those. And that had like big looking for or trying to maintain a relationship with a much younger person energy and vibes to it.
Do you think Greg Schiano would try that?
I think he would before Pat Fitzgerald. I think he would before David Shaw. Yeah.
Shaw's a pretty good
I think there's a certain
answer.
Amount of energy to Greg Schiano that says, sure. Sure, Mac Brown would.
Justin Wilcox?
Justin Wilcox he is lower key, pretty but he's still younger. Up. He's right. Like in his mid-40s, mid to late 40s or something like that. So,
see, I don't think you can do the age thing, though. The age thing, I think, is probably a bit of a
I think
a
Herm
red
would,
hair.
For as long as Herm's still employed, yeah.
Herm would, Joey Maguire, I don't know how old Joey Maguire is, but...
He would.
Joey
yeah.
Maguire.
Sark would.
He would totally do it. Bielema, Brett Bielema would do it, he'd be in.
Brett Bielema would do it, James
Franklin.
Shane Beamer.
Franklin would do it even if there weren't a camera.
Correct.
I would say...
Heupel.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, Heupel would do it. Shaw might be the answer, Shaw and Fitzgerald.
Shaw, Fitzgerald, Allen would.
Gundy.
Tom Allen's got that energy to him,
Gundy
for sure.
Gundy would.
Yeah, Lincoln Riley Tucker. Definitely would.
P.J. Fleck. Oh, my God. P.J. Fleck does it even when he's not recruiting. Paul Chryst. What about Paul Chryst?
Paul Chryst is low. Paul Chryst is absolutely low with how he responded to the turnover chain in the bowl game. Like, he is just... I think he would be... He would be an elite non-debaser.
I think he's probably my answer, just to be a little bit different.
Paul Chryst is a good answer. I'm trying to think, anybody else in the ACC?
Oh,
Dino Babers,
Dino
Tony Elliott, Mike Elko, Jimbo would do it.
Jimbo would, he would definitely do it.
Yeah, of course he would. Leach would do it, but Leach would look weird doing it. He'd have no idea what he's doing,
yeah.
But he'd do it.
Your boy Lanning would do it. Lincoln Riley would do it. What about Chipper? Would Chipper do this?
Chip Kelly? I think he's on the Chryst train of like, he has been notoriously not willing to play the recruiting game as it exists in 2022.
I feel like Chip Kelly would look at a move like that and feel like it's beneath him.
Now... That said, Chip Kelly did jump into that giant cold tub when he was the Eagles coach, if you remember.
Also true.
He's down to have a good time. And like for as much as he thinks, allegedly, that recruiting and debasing oneself and one's time to bend over backwards to the top recruits in the country is a fool's errand. And he wants to find guys who fit, you know, does the big background checks. All reports indicate from Eugene that players loved him. He loved coaching college kids. Like he clicked really well with them. But the recruiting thing, yeah, I don't remember seeing a lot of, you know, him dancing in the locker room.
What about
Dabo would do this?
What about Narduzzi?
He'd be low. But I don't. I think he would do it before Chryst, Shaw, or Fitzgerald.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
I'm trying to think of like Chris Kleiman, hard to see him doing it, but he would do it before them.
He would definitely do it.
Lance Leipold, hard to see it, would probably do it before them, although he's pretty no-nonsense.
No, I like him.
Matt Campbell, yes.
Campbell would do it.
Frost, yes.
We don't know much about Timmy Chang, but Timmy Chang would be in for that. I got
Tucker's no-nonsense, but I think he really is, he grinds out on the recruiting trail.
What about Craig Bull?
Oh, man. I mean,
that's a deep
into
cut
the
going
West jobs, yeah.
Wyoming.
I don't know if Troy Calhoun's doing it. although you know, he does what it takes to be
the hair.
Youthful.
He did the hair thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does. He does what it takes. Oh, man.
This
Brady
has
Hoke.
Been an important conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm glad
absolutely
to have had
no,
it.
No, it is.
You.
It is strange to watch. And if Brian Kelly strings together a bunch of top five classes, you tip your cap and you say more power to you. However you do it, it works. Good for you. But if he's doing this and it doesn't work, you're like, ooh, bro, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I get it. I get you got to do what it takes because Alabama and Georgia are war machines at this point. You're trying to keep up. But like the fact that he is, how tall do you think Brian Kelly is?
Brian Kelly?
5'8", 5'9", 5'7"?
Maybe 5'8".
Okay. So he's about 5'8". So he's just sort of ducking under defensive linemen's shoulders, going pew, 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 and doing like the little dances in his vest. Man, there's just going to be so many gifts if and when he's fired from LSU.
We did the Podrigo show last Thursday.
Yeah, of course.
One of the songs in there that we reviewed and compared, I think I compared it to LSU, the favorite crime song, mm-hmm. where you sort of are in something and you kind of lose yourself a little bit. Because mm-hmm. you're into it. Brian Kelly right now is going through that stage.
Yeah.
Where he's just doing whatever. He's kind of going with the flow. Might look back on it, like you said, if it doesn't work and not feel great about it. But if it does work.
Yeah.
If it does work, there are huge spoils at the end of that rainbow. So
we are tight. Are we not a show that is, if nothing else, we respect bit commitment?
Oh, total. Total
we
bit commitment.
Absolutely respect. Like, Brian Kelly should be dyeing his hair. Brian Kelly should be making appearances on, you know, the mixtapes and music videos of local artists. Like, he should be giving himself to the moment as fully as humanly possible. And I respect it. Like,
I do. I do respect it on some level. I do.
There is.
I do.
There's always going to be, whenever you see a coach doing this specifically, there's always like big time, I've never heard this song, but it's my niece's wedding and I'm hitting the dance floor. Like there is that energy to Brian Kelly all the time with these types of videos. Yeah. But you know what? It's better than sitting at the table and being sour. It's better than sitting at the table during the wedding and not hitting the dance floor. So I'm good with it.
No, I'm okay. I'm okay with it. Look, again, we are in the content business here, Dan.
Of course.
This is what we do now. This is what I do now.
Yeah.
So if he wants to do that dance every day of the week and post it to social media, by all means.
I'm showing up for Kayla on her special day. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's great. Great to see.
Great to see. Is there any other news that we need to discuss before we get into our
I mean, there's always, you know, this coaching hire stuff that trickles all over. Boston College hired, what, Notre Dame's tight ends coach, McNulty?
I saw that.
To be their new OC.
Not Jimmy McNulty. That's a different one.
Yeah.
Saw that. Is it true that you may be in the running to be the new offensive coordinator for Mario Cristobal? Because that's still kind of in progress, right?
Yeah, that's kind of a weird situation. So Miami, and look, Mario Cristobal, and I happen to know a good amount about Mario Cristobal since I am an Oregon fan and I was, you know, party to what happened with new coach hires in Eugene. And he took his time. He always took his time. He interviewed a ton of guys for coordinator roles, assistant roles, and really was, you know, by all accounts, thorough about who he hired. But Miami brought him in on December 6th. We're recording this on what, January 31st?
That's right. Correct.
Miami still does not have an offensive coordinator. They reached out to Jason Candle and he turned them down, the Toledo head coach. There were apparent conversations and it's sort of a he said, he said situation with Kendall Briles and making a move from Arkansas. But they are still without a defensive coordinator, without an offensive coordinator, and now they've lost their corners coach to, I think, Alabama, Treveris Robertson. I might have gotten that name wrong. I apologize if I did. Brian McClendon, who we brought from Oregon to be his receivers coach, is now going to be filling that same role at Georgia. And so, I don't know. With signing day here, with spring coming up, like he hired his strength coach, which is important. He brought him over from Oregon, and he's got a couple other guys he brought over from Oregon, his offensive line coach, his defensive line coach. But it does feel like it's taken him perhaps too long, and that there is, I don't know, there's a reason why coaches are not sticking or coaches don't want to stick that are, you know, interested in that job at one point. I don't know.
It's almost as if hiring a coach via your boosters and not an athletic director is sort of doomed to failure, isn't it? Just a little bit. Like maybe there is some smoke to the program not having itself in order. And, you know, I understand they've brought the guy down from Clemson and they're trying to get things together. And Mario's a big fish. He's a good coach. He's a great recruiter. Like, I don't mean to take anything away from him, but he will eventually find coordinators. I think my point is nobody should be surprised at this point if it feels a little bit disorganized. It feels a little bit all over the place because, frankly, those are the circumstances under which Cristobal took the job.
Yeah. And if you are an assistant in demand, if you're a coordinator in demand, and you interview with a couple different schools, or you go to Miami and then another school shows interest to you, Miami's saying, this will be what the program is like.
Yeah.
These are the plans for the program, potentially. This is how the machine will be built in some time. And then Georgia comes to you, or Alabama comes to you and says, flip a switch. We're ready. And so it's just, it's the sort of perils that come with being a constantly rebuilding and being a program that doesn't seem to, at the moment, potentially will have a solid foundation. That there is just, there are a lot of T's to cross and I's to dot and a lot of promises to be fulfilled, to be TBD. We'll see.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
With all that being said, we wanted to provide further context for what we saw transpire in 2021. So keep in mind, if you go back, at the time I had left the mysterious day job and I was immersing myself in preseason college football fully to the extent that I could, with at that point in time only a limited amount of hours to really throw into it. And I was fascinated by over under totals because, if nothing more, it gives you a guide. It gives you a guide for where the people who use this to put their kids through college, where they think teams are going to be.
Right.
So what we've got in front of us here, and you dutifully put this together, Dan. Thank you for doing this.
Of course.
You put together a list of the teams that either exceeded or fell short of their preseason over-under win totals.
Correct.
So we've got a list here of the teams that overperformed, the teams that underperformed.
At least according to Vegas expectations, right? Not necessarily internal ones or fan base expectations, but like this is how Vegas set the line of saying, we think half of the people are going to bet this way and half of the people are going to bet that way. This is that enticing number. And these are the teams that completely outperformed or came way, way underneath it.
So we pulled a few of these out that I think are of interest, and I know you and I each have a couple that we want to talk about, but I think the intention here is to look at where some of these teams ended up, how they performed relative to that over-under, and then talk a little bit about why.
Yeah. By the way, looking back in retrospect, coming off of the weird, in a lot of ways, awful 2020 season in terms of the variance of results and games getting canceled and teams going 3 weeks without playing, stuff like that, there were just going to be some absolutely awful lines being set.
Oh, yeah.
That you're just like, somebody's like, yeah, about 5.5, and they win 10 games. And like, why? Well, 2020 was weird for everybody. And so we don't fully understand the scope of what a team could have been or could be at full strength with a much more normal experience. Or a team just got lucky in 2020, or a team had an inflated win total because of all sorts of things happening around them. So basically, what I took from this, if we're going to be like prisoners of the moment, is, okay, you're going to look at experience on a certain level. You're going to look at schedule. You're also going to look at conference. You're like, okay, has this conference been down for a while and now have a bunch of teams with upperclassmen who are just going to progress back to the mean, or just like they're not going to have as much bad turnover luck as they did last year? Like, you're also just like looking at teams where you're like, what is the collapse potential? What is their Jenga potential? You know,
Jenga.
And so, so like one of the teams here is USC, who had, I think it was a 9-win total set in this one.
Right.
And they finished the season at, what, 5-7 USC, or 4-8? Like, they were terrible. The collapse potential was certainly high given Clay Helton's job status, but you looked at their actual schedule and you're like, they don't have anybody tough in the non-conference part of the schedule. Like, early on, it looks pretty good. Like, they miss Oregon and Washington, the two best teams, presumed to be the best teams in the North. Like, 9 games seems fine. So going, you'd have to just bank on collapse potential, because realistically, it was understandable that USC win around 9 games last year.
Yeah.
The reason they didn't, well, injuries. And it turns out they just weren't good. They didn't have guys on defense. And teams got better in the Pac-12 on their schedule. Like Oregon State. Oregon State is a team that should basically never beat USC. They moved the ball all over SC in the win in the Coliseum, which was their first win there forever and ever. And so USC is a really good example of just collapse potential. You knew they had it. There's some teams that just have that in their DNA, given the circumstances at coach or the personnel, whatever. USC was a prime collapse potential that I guess we just didn't fully underline ahead of the year.
Yeah, and one that I think is kind of on the opposite end of that spectrum, where we saw the collapse potential, but a lot of folks didn't see it coming. Washington.
Correct. Yeah.
Washington's over-under was 9. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've talked about it for probably 8 months running now, but a lot of the preview publications are very high on the Huskies. Phil Steele, oh my gosh, he couldn't have been any higher on Washington.
Right.
It took a few weeks for me, certainly for you, for a lot of folks who follow college football, to fully come to grips with the fact that what we've seen early from the Huskies is not a fluke. This just might be a very poorly coached team. And, you know, you can never account for coaching circumstances and coaching weirdness in some of these lines, right? You can certainly account for, yes, I think this guy's a good coach or a bad coach, for whatever that's worth. But in this case with Jimmy Lake, we had real circumstances that went awry. And I think that contributed to the collapse that we saw from Washington. But Washington only winning, like, what, they went 4 games.
Right.
I mean, that was so far short of expectations that I don't think anybody could have seen it coming. You certainly could have gone into the year and said, I don't think Washington's going to get to 9 wins. There are reasons why I don't feel like that's attainable. I don't remember what you had with Washington. I don't think you were as high
as
I
went under, yeah.
But even still, this far under, nobody could have seen that coming.
No, I mean, the only real sense was like nobody really liked John Donovan as the answer for that offense. And so that was going to hold them back. But going into the season, you thought, OK, they have an experienced quarterback. They had the COVID issues that prevented them from playing Oregon and playing in the Pac-12 championship game. But they have this reputation of having a solid defense and Jimmy Lake's being a defensive minded coach. They've recruited well. On offense, they've got this very experienced offensive line. They've got one of the best tight ends in the country. And like, even if they're not great, they should still be good. And you can win 9 games as a good team in the Pac-12. What we didn't fully look at was maybe they were the beneficiary of the COVID year, the weird COVID year, and they won some clunkers. And also, like, they had a ton of transfers, especially on offense, heading into the 2021 season. Almost like, you know, pigeons freaking out ahead of an earthquake. We're like, Should we? Is there something coming? Is there a bunch of frogs won't shut up? And then there's an earthquake a half hour later. And I think that that was it. That that was the best we could have hoped for, that a pretty average offense wasn't going to get better. And the fact that all these receivers are leaving might be an indicator of, ooh, things are trending pretty quickly downward in Seattle.
Yeah, that one I didn't see coming. The other one that I didn't see coming was Florida. Florida
would have been tough to see coming. Yeah.
Florida was at 9. Their over under was 9. They obviously got to 6, and that was a huge disappointment. Sort of in the same vein, though not quite to the same extreme extent as mm-hmm. Jimmy Lake, but you had that coaching turmoil. You had that very clearly break down about halfway through the season,
right,
where it just seems like Florida stopped playing. They stopped playing for Dan Mullen.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you the number of articles I've read either on The Athletic or through team sites or on message boards, what have you, where folks have been talking for the last couple months about how this team just didn't play hard. That was kind of the book on Florida from opposing coaches, that they don't play hard. They're undisciplined. They can get up some of the time, but most of the time they kind of don't care.
Right.
There was no way to really account for that before the season. 9 wins in the SEC is difficult. That's mm-hmm. difficult by any stretch, but even with a lot of the turnover, it seemed as if they had talent in place where they could get to that 9.
Right.
I was very high in Florida before the start of the year. That clearly did not materialize.
The case against Florida would have been, and I didn't tap into it in the same way that you didn't tap into it, was every single fan base feels like the world is, the sky is falling, right? Because they're not recruiting, they're not hiring the right coaches, they're not getting the best out of their players, whatever. Because just that's the nature of fans, holding their own team to an incredibly high standard that it's unattainable for basically everybody. But Florida fans are an educated fan base because they know what incredible national teams look like. They know what SEC champions look like, and they know what they don't look like. They've had a bunch of coaches who can recruit but can't win, or a bunch of coaches who won but eventually couldn't recruit and then couldn't win, a bunch of weird personalities that weren't going to be long-term answers. And so Florida fans were very quick to say, is keeping Todd Grantham around? Okay, that's not the answer at defensive coordinator. It's right. not going to last. Florida's not going to win 10 games a year with Todd Grantham calling plays on defense. Florida fans would say they're not recruiting as well as they should be. And yes, Florida is stringing together top 10 or top 15 or top 20 classes or whatever, but they're getting killed in their own backyard, which is a recipe for a downward trend. And so those types of things are that the warnings, the trends that saying like this isn't adding up for a long-term solution for Dan Mullen. And so that you would have to believe and buy into that, because I didn't. I looked at the classes and I said, they're still pretty good. They're not amazing. They're not Urban Meyer Florida classes, but they're still pretty good. You can still win a bunch of games.
Yeah.
But at the same time, and like, what did they do with Kyle Trask a year ago?
Right.
Kyle Pitts, Kadarius Toney, like all these guys were record-setting guys on offense, but they're not necessarily guys Dan Mullen brought in. They're,
no,
you know, it's
exactly.
just one of those things where you're just like, a lot of Florida fans had that sort of like sell high mentality.
Yeah, and
I don't
feel like Florida fans were unrealistic. I felt
like they
were cautiously optimistic about what could happen
yeah.
in 2021. But I recall, in just going back through my own preview, kind of what my headspace was talking about Florida. Mm-hmm. I was high on Florida. I would never have bet that over at 9 wins, because again, this is a team that played both Alabama and Georgia, which mm-hmm. on the surface at that point in whenever we did this, mid-July.
Right.
At that point, it seemed like those were losses. Now, Florida played Bama pretty tight.
Oh, absolutely. They
could have won that
right
game.
There.
Could have won that game. But that on the surface looked like two losses. If you're betting on the over at that juncture, you're saying those are going to be two losses. They can't slip up at all the rest of the way.
Right.
And I wasn't comfortable with that. Now, I think I had them at 8 wins, 8-4. They fell short of that by a couple mm-hmm. games and, you know, in many other ways. But the Florida one kind of snuck up on me. It really did. To the extent that they would only win 6 games and look as bad as they did down the stretch.
Right.
That to me was, I could not have foreseen that one coming.
Yeah, the big shocker was probably, I mean, outside of the first half of the Samford game, it's the South Carolina game. It's that right. You look at Florida's schedule, they beat an upcoming Tennessee team comfortably to go to 3-1, I believe. So basically what's happening is Kentucky has always been. In the last few years, they've been solid to, if not good, a good team. So they look disastrous against Kentucky and just mistake prone. It's the South Carolina game where that was like the big indicator. LSU, it's back and forth. It's an uncharacteristic shootout, whatever. You lose that game, a bunch of turnovers. That was an indicator that things have gotten really, really sloppy, and that was only a few weeks after the Bama game. But, you know, losing to Mizzou in overtime the way that they did, and then South Carolina by 23 or whatever, like, it just, there was a, I don't know if it's a stubbornness or if it's just, I don't know what you could have seen ahead of time, because you look at Emory Jones with the experience he had in the program. Dan Mullen still has the offensive mind. They still have receivers, and just collapsed. And I may have taken the under if we do this again, if we go back in time and do it again. I just don't know how much we could have seen this coming as outsiders.
Michigan's a team that overperformed in a big way.
Yeah.
Plus
Michigan
three.
State in a huge way.
Michigan
plus
State in a huge way and plus six.
Yeah.
Oklahoma State also fared very well with this. One that I would love to talk more about is Baylor.
Sure.
Baylor's over-under was 5.5 before the start of the year. And I went on our Daily Bears with our friend Peter Pope, the Pope, the OG mm-hmm. Pope. And I talked to him about where I was at with Baylor. And, you know, I think what makes the Baylor result in 2021 so damn impressive, and you've heard me say this, is just the way that Dave Aranda looked at what transpired in 2020 after the weird COVID year. He gave an objective analysis as to what he thought was wrong, and he changed it. He changed it. Most guys don't have the gumption to do that. So he swapped out offensive coordinator. He started going for it more on fourth downs. He had turnover to deal with, but he was able to kind of pull things together in a way that they were just really fundamentally sound. Over under, again, 5.5. I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, geez, there are too many question marks here with the Baylor Bears, but he circled the wagons. He was able to get that team playing so well as a team to not beat itself. They had their moments, but they were just so solid. That was the theme of this past season. If you can have a solid football team out there, it will produce. It will produce. We saw that. We saw results time and again from teams right. that weren't great, but were just really solid. And Baylor, let's be honest, Baylor very much fit that mold. They were really solid across the board. And that's why they were plus 4.5. Incredible year.
It was, in retrospect, kind of a strange year in the Big 12.
It was.
I think you have to give credit to Baylor for overcoming that, you know, win total number in a big way. But at the same time, so they actually lose to TCU. But you look at where the Big 12 has fallen to in terms of week-to-week consistency on offense, especially. Because defensively, there's some good teams.
Sure.
So Baylor probably shouldn't have beaten Texas Tech. I think that was a Donovan Smith lit them up. But they win that game with like a, you know, a nothing win, like a 4% win expectancy or something like that. Texas falls apart and Baylor wins that game. And Texas's defense is atrocious. Like, Texas is wildly inconsistent, atrocious. New coach at UT. Oklahoma State, really, really good, and they lose that game. But like, West Virginia kind of falls off a cliff this year. No. Oklahoma, in the way that they looked on offense for large swaths of this year, especially turning to a freshman who, I think Caleb Williams has all the potential in the world, but he threw in some clunkers of quarters, halves, and just general game performances. I don't know. Some of it is Baylor just taking advantage. Like, Baylor just found themselves on much more solid ground than much of the conference. And so, I don't know. I could not have predicted that. I like the Jeff Grimes hire. I was unsure of where they were going to be at quarterback, but I figured it was going to be an upgrade over where Charlie Brewer was in 2020. But, yeah, I don't know how much there is in terms of lessons to glean from Baylor's 2021 going into the year. As much as it is like, weird year in the Big 12 and Baylor seems solid all around and took more chances. So.
Yeah, I think it bodes well for Baylor moving forward. I think if nothing more, And you're right. There is definitely an atmospheric calculation that we need to make.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of made that up. But
no, it's a good turn of phrase. I like it.
You need to look at these surroundings, the other teams in the conference, to figure out how much value you want to put on some of these results. There was some of that going on for Baylor. But
yeah,
if nothing more, I think you come out of the 2021 campaign, obviously conference champion, you'll take that.
Mm-hmm.
And if nothing more, you know that Dave Aranda can coach. You know Dave Aranda can coach now. You know, you got to see a full body of work here. You know he can coach.
Yeah.
That one snuck up on me. The Baylor one snuck up on me. One that didn't was NC State.
Yeah, you liked NC State a good deal more than I did going into the year.
I was all in on NC State. Their over-under was 6. They finished with 9 wins. They had losses at Mississippi State where they played like crap week 2. It was a horrible game. They lost a really close one on the road at Miami, and then they lost the shootout on the road against Wake Forest. Those are their 3 losses.
Right.
But every other game along the way, they won. They had the big, you could argue, program-defining win, even though it might not have been a full-strength Clemson team because of their injuries and just some of their struggles early. But beating Clemson 27-21 in the first month of the season was a pretty big deal for NC State.
Of course.
That was a game we didn't know about. And I understand why Vegas might want to look at that one and say, that's probably a loss. But it was strange to me that they would not give NC State more credit than 6 wins for that line because it was a veteran team. Granted, we only saw Devin Leary here and there a year ago.
Yeah, we didn't know, but yeah.
We just didn't know. There were a lot of uncertain aspects to this team, but with all they had coming back and with what appeared to be a relatively favorable schedule, over 6 seemed like a lock to me. I wish I would have bet it. I didn't bet it. I don't like doing over-unders because then your money's locked up and I'm not betting a whole lot, but I wish that were one that I would have stuck to my guns and actually bet in real life because I really like the Wolfpack going into this season.
Yeah, they were. So in 2020, they go 8-4. 2019 was a disastrous year. So it seemed like things were trending up, but they didn't do anything amazingly well. And I think that largely that was because of Devin Leary's injury. And it was Bailey Hockman? Took over.
Yep.
And so it's a backup quarterback. So they're getting healthier. And yeah, it was a good move, especially if you figured the ACC was going to continue to be as topsy-turvy, that Dave Doran is somebody who is, right, he's a competence buoy in rocky seas, right? He's always getting the 8-9 wins. So it makes sense that you would have had that faith, but you would have also had to just be a Devin Leary believer. You would have to have been a believer there and also in North Carolina, given what they've lost, and we can get into them next if you want, given what they've lost, or Virginia Tech, given Justin Fuente's status, even after the 2020 season. You're just I don't know. NC State just they hired Tony Gibson, and you were just betting on foundation. You were betting on consistency in a conference that seemed to have a lot of variance. So, yeah, I get the NC State appreciation going into the year. I get that.
Let me talk to you about North Carolina, UNC, excuse me.
Yeah.
North Carolina's over-under was 10.
Yeah.
Big number. And this is a team that had a lot of production go to the NFL. And so to set that at 10 always felt high to me. Now, I really like Sam Howell. We both did. We're both Sam Howell believers. We like Sam Howell a lot. And I think we both feel generally pretty good about the talent that Mack Brown has brought into Chapel Hill. Done a good job in the recruiting trail. That being said, 10 is still a pretty big number.
Yeah.
And I don't remember where you were exactly on North Carolina. I think you did the preview for the Tar Heels. But I remember looking at that number and saying, okay, I like UNC. I hope UNC can rise up as the counterbalance to Clemson. At the time, we were all in on Clemson too.
Right.
But 10 wins feels like a stretch.
And North Carolina, by the way, has been a decent counterbalance on the recruiting trail.
They have, absolutely.
Yeah.
So to what extent did North Carolina take you by surprise?
A decent amount of surprise. I figured that a first-round NFL caliber quarterback was good enough to raise the level of everybody around him. The problem is that's true of receivers. It can be true of a running game. But when he is constantly under pressure, when you lose a line in college, there's only so much you can do to improve in a year. And it's not the NFL where you can go into free agency. It's not the NFL where you can prioritize line in the draft or something like that.
Yeah.
And even right. NFL teams struggle with that a good deal. And so with it being relatively early in Mack Brown's tenure, I was never a huge fan of the Jay Bateman hire. I thought he was merely okay, if not a little bit below average at Army. I thought North Carolina could have done better at defensive coordinator. And some of those cracks shown, like North Carolina got completely torched in 2020 in the back end. They ended up, what, starting a high school senior, Tony Grimes, when he was a top recruit, essentially, who enrolled early. So that was a worrisome trend. They weren't covering a bunch of games in 2020. The defense showed some cracks just up front. They just weren't as strong in the trenches as they probably should have been, considering Mack Brown's recruiting ability. They didn't necessarily hit the portal as hard as they should, I guess, in retrospect. But 10 seemed like an inflated number, and it's almost, I was going to say it's comparable to where Iowa State was, where...
Yeah.
A program can be interesting and deep, and Iowa State was coming off of a bigger platform and winning, I think, the Fiesta Bowl the year before. We're like, okay, they're returning everybody. They're just going to take the next step. They've got an experienced quarterback, the coach, the coaching staff. You know, the lines are intact. Like, it made sense that people would be bullish on Iowa State. But North Carolina winning 10 games with what they had to replace, it seemed like not unreasonable, but that is everything needs to go right. Every young player needs to hit on their potential, and they need to win every single clunker, every single 50-50 game. And that's just a lot to ask. That's a lot to ask when you don't have the depth yet. It's a lot to ask when you don't have the defense to bail you out of turnovers, to bail you out of situations. And so, in retrospect, it maybe seems a little bit more obvious to me. But no, I didn't see this kind of... week in, week out. Like, you look at the Georgia Tech game, they gave up, what, 40, 50 points to this Georgia Tech team? Like, didn't see that potential coming, no.
Surprise, not surprised. Let's go through some of the other teams on this list here. Houston. Houston won 11 games. Their over-under was 8. I was not surprised by that at all. I was in on Houston. I
wasn't to this extent. I didn't think the defense would be as good. But
Same.
It's one of those things where... they were hitting the portal hard, and I think most of us believe Dana Holgorsen is a good but not great coach, and a good coach in the American, hitting the portal, returning a quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would have penciled him for 9 or 10. I did not see 11 coming.
Yeah, I didn't see 11, but I was in on Houston. Oklahoma State's an interesting case, 7.5 before the season. Obviously went 3.5 over that number.
Yep.
Just had the... what, one regular season loss. We felt good about the defense. The defense had been trending in a good direction.
Yep.
I have never been shy to admit my reluctance on the Spencer Sanders front.
But totally.
The defense had been trending in a good direction. I think we undervalued, frankly, how good it could be. It was very good defense. Very good defense. That's why they got to the heights that they did. So that one surprised me a little bit. What about Ole Miss, Dan?
Ole Miss surprised, not dramatically so. And by the way, Oklahoma State surprised, but not dramatically so, too. I figured they'd be pretty good, but I didn't see the star power on offense, which made me think that they would win lose two or three games, but still field a really strong defense. And, you know, the combination of not having the star power and a mistake-prone quarterback, it worried me, and they... gave me a reason not to worry.
Yeah.
Ole Miss was interesting. Lane Kiffin in a quarterback with talent is tantalizing. Like, especially in his first real season coaching the team and where that defense was when he arrived with where that defense ascended to this year to become pretty interesting. Not a full surprise, but dramatically over. Yeah, I think I'm surprised that in year two he won 10 games for sure. I didn't see it coming.
The BYU result this year was, what, 10 wins? They were good. I did not see this one coming to this extent. 6.5 to me, I recall being very much on the fence because new quarterback, they've got some turnover. It was a great campaign. I didn't see that one coming, not to this extent.
Yeah, the BYU thing, you would had to have been extremely down on the Pac-12.
Yeah.
You would have had to know that Charlie Brewer was not long for Salt Lake City, but they were going to play him in the Holy War week two, and then Cam Rising would have been a clearly better option. And so, they were a hard out, and I definitely didn't see it coming. I definitely thought they had enough to still be decent.
Yeah. Yeah, but I was in the same boat. Yeah.
They lose to Boise State and they lose on the road to Baylor. They get a disastrously bad collapsing USC, a woefully disappointing, but a disappointing ASU team, but that game is in Provo. They get Washington State, I think on the heels of Wazoo firing their coach, which is an incredibly difficult spot for Wazoo. And they get what, Virginia? Did Brennan Armstrong play in that game? Or I don't, you can pull that up while I'm talking. It was just a weird year for BYU.
Yeah, no,
and things broke their way. But they largely took care of business. I mean, it was a shootout against Virginia, but otherwise, yeah, I guess you just could have looked at BYU and said, they're a wild card. Let's go over just because they look solid. Kalani Sitake is hired well.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think I would have been confident in that over.
Pitt did well. I don't know if that's terribly surprising. We liked Kenny Pickett. I don't know if I quite expected that kind of campaign, but the Kenny Pickett to Jordan Addison connection really blossomed. The Pitt defense, the Pitt pass defense especially, sort of let him down. But
somewhat. Yeah.
This was definitely a good team led by its quarterback. So it's not all that surprising to me. One that I was
in on Pitt, by the way. There's no way I saw the Kenny Pickett thing coming.
No.
That type of improvement. But it just in looking at their schedule ahead of time with Tennessee with a new coach. They end up losing to Western Michigan. But otherwise, like, the non-conference isn't terrible. And then you have Georgia Tech, which was lost heading into the season and still appears to be lost. Virginia Tech coming out and saying, we're not firing our coach, but we do need to tell you that we're not firing our coach. Definitely didn't see the Clemson collapse, quote unquote, coming, even though they, you know, got to a respectable number of wins in a quote unquote down year. But yeah, the Miami thing going to a backup quarterback who worked out for them, but Miami having the topsy-turvy year that they did, I figured that they would be on more solid ground this year, returning De'Aaron King, returning what they did on defense, led by like Bubba Bolden, whatever. I didn't see Pitt as that other like competence buoy along with NC State within the ACC that like, look, they're not an amazing team, but they're a good team.
But good gets you places, right? It's
and
sort of the
good
Baylor
gets you
theme.
Places.
The
yeah.
Baylor theme, right? Good gets you places in a season as crazy as 2021, yeah. Where there was a lot more parity than I think we've seen in a lot of recent years. I do want to talk very quickly about Texas, Northwestern, and Nebraska, because I think each of those is interesting, but we can't fully close the loop on some of the surprise teams to the good without mentioning Purdue and Michigan State. Purdue was the giant killer.
Yep.
Purdue was the fun team that everyone wanted to root for, had a bunch of big upsets, led in large part by David Bell and George Karloftis, both of whom are going to the NFL, both of whom declared that they were going to the NFL before the bowl game. They opted out of the bowl game, and they somehow beat Tennessee in the bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, I think, a great testament to how hard that team has played all season. To be without those guys and still win was, in my view, a pretty big deal. So nobody could have seen the extent to which Purdue would rise above their 6-win over under. Finishing with 9 wins is an incredible campaign for them. The Michigan State thing, though, is just freaking eerie. 4 wins always felt a little light. However, we didn't have much to go on. We knew that they showed some fight in 2020. They only won 2 games in 2020, but one of them was Michigan, was the other Penn State, like whoever it was, right? Going 2-5 in that campaign was not necessarily a great portal into what we might see here in 2021. But this is a team that continuously played really tough, and they found ways to manufacture points. They were good on offense, not so much on defense.
Yeah.
But the Michigan State one, above all others, to be +6 over mm-hmm. their over-under of 4 was just sort of the crown jewel of this past college football season, at least within this context.
I thought the floor would be raised via portal, via Mel Tucker's coaching acumen. I thought he made good hires when he was first there and that it was going to take some time. Impossible to judge in the COVID year, you know, as it is for most teams that made a hire in the COVID year. But I looked at Michigan State as a team and a program who hadn't found a quarterback. It was Northwestern, by the way, of course. Big Ten West champ, 2020 Big Ten West champ Northwestern, who Michigan State beat, not Penn State, in 2020. I figured the floor would be raised. I figured with the raised level at various positions, the floor would be raised. But I didn't see them as solving quarterback. And so
no.
I didn't expect anything anywhere near this. So you were just buying low on Michigan State if you were a believer in them or a Michigan State fan. Because unless you were close to that program and following them day to day, I think it was pretty difficult to see. Look, and they sneak by in a couple games, you know, have the disastrous second half against Nebraska and the weird game against Indiana, and they get the fortuitous fumble against Michigan. But even still, they're comfortably hitting the over with those wins. So, no, could not have seen that coming. I mean, look, ahead of the season, you're looking at the schedule and you're like, it's difficult to find 8 or 9 wins on this Michigan State schedule. Like it was looking at Purdue's schedule. Like, you're going to be a believer in Purdue on the road against Iowa and on the road against Nebraska?
Yeah, exactly.
This Purdue team?
Exactly.
Like, it just, I don't think a lot of people were in that headspace. And so, I think Michigan State definitely overperformed, at least in my eyes. And I see that as a good thing.
Let's close this conversation out by talking about 3 teams.
Okay.
Let's talk about Texas, who was -3. Their over-under was mm-hmm. 8. They finished with 5. Let's talk about Northwestern, who was -3.5. Their over-under was 6.5. And let's talk about Nebraska. Their over-under was 6. They obviously finished 3-9 with those 9
right.
one-score losses, whatever it was, whatever the crazy mm-hmm. stat was for the Cornhuskers. I'm curious to get your take on which of those 3 teams surprises you the most with the way they finished. I feel like it's a very interesting topic for discussion because, and here's why.
Okay.
Texas had the new coach, but a ton of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you were unreasonably high on the Longhorns the way I was.
I was going to say, like you were.
Like I was.
Mm-hmm.
Full disclosure. It still seems a little wild to me that they would only finish with 5 wins. That's very surprising. Northwestern, we're accustomed to them finding a way to win the Big Ten West, but I don't know if either of us was all that high on the Wildcats going into this past season.
Right.
We had our moments where we talked aspects of that team up, but I don't remember us ever being all that gung-ho on the Wildcats. So that one to me is not surprising. Nebraska had a brutal schedule. And so I was almost willing to accept pretty much any result for them in 2021. I didn't want it to be a situation where they only had 3 wins. I
right.
didn't want that. But 6 to me, it was like I could go either way on this. It's not surprising that they would fall short of that. I think of the 3, Texas is the one that surprises me the most. Because if we want to talk about atmospherics in the Big 12, as you did earlier, mm-hmm. it really was a more gettable version of the Big 12 this past season. And for Texas to be as disorganized as they were, to have still have trouble tackling on defense, despite that apparently being like a focal point going into the year,
mm-hmm.
that to me is still the biggest disappointment of those 3 teams. Agree, disagree, where are you at?
Disagree. To me, it's Nebraska.
Okay.
It's Nebraska because of the amount of time Scott Frost has now been in Lincoln, the experience of Adrian Martinez, the improvement of the defense since Scott Frost got there under, I think it's Eric Chenander, the defensive coordinator who goes back to Oregon days with Scott Frost. And the schedule notwithstanding, because it's a tough schedule, I don't know. It's the Big Ten West, which I think is fine. But, you know, we're coming off of a year in which Wisconsin was extremely disappointing. Minnesota was extremely disappointing for a stretch in 2020 that, like, I thought Nebraska had enough continuity there that they would be able to close out games. And the surprise to me is this should be the surprise to everybody because it's very hard to go 3-9 with a competent offense and a good defense. It just is.
That's true.
It just is. And so I file Texas under the sort of like Lakers law that Vegas is always going to inflate a Lakers win total because, you know, LA guys always go to Vegas and they love betting the Lakers and betting the over. And they're just like, there's so much enthusiasm around Texas in the way that there's enthusiasm over like the Lakers and the Yankees and all these things where it's just like, doesn't take much to bring them back. They're Texas. Come on. And so Texas is coming off a bowl performance in which they look like they maybe have a quarterback of the future in Casey Thompson. And although they name Hudson Card the starter, so he's like compared to Aaron Rodgers. Bruce Feldman compares him to Aaron Rodgers, his potential, his skill set, whatever. And then you're bringing in Sark, who was just with Mac Jones, who was just with Tua, and you're just like, plug and play. Plug and play. Turns out the defense was a lot farther away. Turns out the offense was a lot outside of like the emergence of Xavier Worthy and Bijan Robinson until he got hurt. Line wasn't there. Quarterback play was inconsistent. Injuries at quarterback. And so I think what happened is there's just always going to be swirling enthusiasm. Texas is capital B back. And so that they fell short, kind of nothing new.
Yeah.
That Nebraska fell short in the games that they did, Michigan, Michigan State, Iowa with a lead, like all those games where they had a lead or they were right there, one possession, and they give it away, Illinois to start the season. Like, I don't know. I was surprised that Nebraska wasn't a bowl team this year, even if you go back to my expectation before the season started with that brutal schedule. Oh man, that like Pat Fitzgerald makes bad hires. Like Mike Hankwitz was awesome in 2008 for a hire, and he was awesome for 12, 13 years, but he was far too loyal to his offensive coordinator for far too many years. And then he hires, I think, Jim O'Neill, a failed defensive coordinator in the NFL.
Right.
The offense,
right.
There's no, you know, it's just Hunter Johnson doesn't work out. Like Peyton Ramsey's fine. He's if not unspectacular, but like, there was nothing about Northwestern that screamed, oh, I see. This is the overhaul, right? That I think the surprise with Northwestern is like they kind of, you can just blink and they're going to be a bowl team. That's just how Pat Fitzgerald is just like duct tape and chicken wire to bowl Northwestern. Sometimes 9-win with Northwestern.
Right. I think
the hires have been suspect there.
They have. I think the surprise with Northwestern, and you're right. I mean, the surprise with Northwestern over the years has been that they've been so good that they find ways, like you said, smoke and mirrors, duct right. tape and chicken wire to be as good as they are, win the Big Ten West, go to a good bowl game, that type of thing. The surprise this year is how bad they were.
Well, they fielded the historically bad offense 2 years ago.
I get it, ago, but whatever, it was so bad. It was really bad. Yeah. Really bad where we're on this show. We're looking at Northwestern. We're thinking they got no shot in any of these games.
Yeah.
No shot. And keep in mind, you and I are used to dunking on the Iowa offense.
Mm-hmm.
Northwestern was horrible. Horrible. So I just, if I were ranking these in order of most surprised to least surprised, I would say probably Texas won for me because they've got a special place in my heart. What can I say? Northwestern 2, Nebraska 3. I wasn't surprised by the Nebraska result, if only because I knew the schedule was tough. And, you know, I knew they're going to be hitching their wagon again to Adrian Martinez. And no disrespect to Adrian Martinez, but,
right.
you know, we've seen a couple years of what Scott Frost is trying to do. And it spooked me out a little bit that it was all on him or felt like it might all be on him again.
Mm-hmm.
So that one doesn't surprise me as much as the other two.
Yeah. God, do you think Pat Fitzgerald and Kirk Ferentz just get together in the offseason, say like, how can we win the West with an awesome defense and no offense? Should we just keep playing like this? Should we just keep doing this? Should we just be like silly little boys? keep using this and employing this as our strategy? It's working. And did once again. Yeah, I don't know. The Nebraska thing to me is just the mind blower.
Yeah. All right. Well, write in. We're at solidverbal@gmail.com. You can also go to the website, solidverbal.com. We will post clips of this show across all of our social media platforms as well. But weigh in. Mm-hmm. Let us know what your thoughts are. Who surprised you? Who didn't surprise you? What were points of contention for you as a college football fan and watching some of these teams play? What caught you off guard? We would obviously welcome your feedback. You can do so across, again, all of those platforms. You can also do so at verballers.com. That is our Patreon community. We'll drop this show early. As soon as we hit stop here, you're going to send me your audio. I'm going to cut it and get it posted so that we can get some real-time reaction from our certified and premium Verballers. But Verballers.com, Verballers.com is where you can access that community. And one more time, don't forget SolidGiveaway.com. SolidGiveaway.com. Get your name in the hat to win that Reggie Bush signed mini helmet.
Yes.
Which we will draw on Valentine's Day.
San Diego State, 4.5 games above. Indiana, with a win total set at 8 games.
Yeesh.
Heading into the 2021 season.
-6.
Sliding in at 2-10.
-6. Yeah.
That one is tough. That one's tough. You mentioned Purdue, Western Kentucky, adding our guy Bailey Zappi and Kittley at offensive coordinator.
Yep.
I keep wanting to say George Kittley because of George Kittle, but Zach Kittley at offensive coordinator. They go 2.5 over the expected win total. Fresno State did a nice job with Kalen DeBoer. And UTSA, worth mentioning. They showed potential, but were kind of a disaster in finishing out games. They make that next step, I think in large part because of the passing game. Frank Harris and just a really impressive year.
Big Frank. Sincere McCormick. So, yeah.
Yep. So really cool to see. In terms of lessons moving forward with how I'm going to look at this, I think I'm going to look at returning production, consistency along the coaching staff, and just how much I buy a team's conference. I think that it's the conference purchasing that is going to be my big thing. Like if I am just like not a Big 12 believer, I'm not an ACC believer heading into the 2022 season, I'm committing to that. Mm. I'm absolutely committing to that with my win totals.
All right. Well, we've got months and months before we
yes, we do
see the win totals for the 2022 season, but we'll be all over that for sure if and when that comes to fruition. Dan, always a pleasure to speak with you.
Hey, same.
It was good to go through all the Jackson darts. Can I have that sound one more time, please?
Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, I love that.
Of course you can. Always. You can just call me up on the phone and say, can I hear the drop? And I will. I'll absolutely play it for you.
I appreciate that. We talked about Jackson Dart. We talked about Brian Kelly. We talked about Jim Harbaugh. Mm-hmm. All the news in college football. Hopefully gave you a little bit more context here on the season that was. We will be back on Thursday. We'll be talking about National Signing Day.
Yes.
We have to.
Of course. I like to.
It's the reason for the season. For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, we'll talk to you all in a few days. In the meantime, as always, stay solid.
Peace.